aboard, you people. Starship Rokan show off for another day of broadcast insolence, another week. And wow, there's a lot going on. We'll talk to Ben Bradley coming up here in a few minutes. He was the one that broke the story that the helicopter that crashed in California, killing Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven others on board, was once owned by Rob Blagojevich, actually by the state of Illinois, but it was the VIP, as they call it, transportation for the governor. So it's just a bitter irony to all of this. So we'll talk about that and also the investigation and what goes on from there. Kelly Meyer, she is our Washington correspondent, and she's going to talk about what's happening in D.C. today. Capitol Hill, the president's defense is up. His lawyers are defending him. And also, interesting, Victoria Tensing, who's one of his attorneys, has been up defending Rudy Giuliani, calling him America's mayor. And he was not an American hero before he started supporting the president. So we'll find out what that was all about. And this is all coming up in this hour. And Governor Pritzker has announced that he sees no reason to pause the program that, according to the Secretary of State's office, accidentally registered non-citizens to vote in Illinois, which was, in fact, the knock on the whole motor voter thing. Like when you go and you register to get your to re-up your driver's license, or you try to get your first driver's license, you can automatically register you to vote at the location, at the address that your license sends you. And this motor voter had been a big political football for years. And Republicans were saying, listen, this is going to be a way it's going to make it easier for people who shouldn't be able to vote, which are the non-citizens, to be able to vote. And Democrats were like, no. It's just going to make it easier for people to vote. Don't you want people to vote? Don't you want people to be able to exercise their franchise as Americans? And then the next thing you know, this is what happened. It's not actually the next thing you know, but it happened surprisingly in relatively short order. So So the governor is stepping into something right there to say, hey, no, it's going to be just fine. They fixed the problem. So I think there's more to be learned about that. That all comes your way. Plus, a little bit later on, Mark McKinnon from The Circus on Showtime is going to talk about what happened in Washington and also in Iowa. And we've got John Cass to talk a little bit later on about the square off you heard in the news between Megan Fox and that Conway kid, the young challenger. What did I say? Who did I say?
Did you say Megan Fox?
I meant Kim Fox. You know, I'm so caught in the Grammys. I don't even know what to do.
Can she sing?
I don't know. But she could do other things. It's, a celebrity. It's Kim Fox. Megan Fox is not running for Cook County State's Attorney. Although, I'll bet you something right now. She'd win if she ran. That's how I feel about that. So we'll talk a little bit about that. John Cass was in that meeting today, that Tribune editorial board meeting where the two went after each other. So we'll discuss all of that. All right? Okay. And medical doctors are here to tell you but whether Wuhan is going to kill you or seasonal depression is bad for you. We know it's bad for you, but what can you do about it? Because January, it turns out, a lot of medical experts are seeing more and more and more cases of this because it's been relatively snow-free, but weeks like last week where the sun didn't come out and it was just constantly dripping on you, that does not help. No matter what you did outside for the last 6 days, some droplet of water, freezing cold water, fell on you, no matter what you were doing. Even if it were, like when the sun broke out, it was still doing it because it was dripping from something above you. And that's apparently got people in a really bad mood. All right. And then, of course, a lot of discussion of Kobe Bryant's legacy as well. All that comes your way on the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN, along with news at the top and the bottom of the hour. And we got Kevin on the sports. We got Lauren on the traffic. And tell us right now what's happening on the roadways and in the skies. Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN TV newsroom right now.
Hello, Rogue.
Hello,
good to be
Benjamin.
With you on this Monday.
Now, Ben broke the story last night that the helicopter that crashed in California, killing Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven other people, including the pilot, was actually at one point owned by the state of Illinois and considered to be VIP transport. So we assume that Blago flew around in that thing.
Yeah, Governor Blagojevich was fond of using the state helicopter. He would actually call the media out to have a news conference before he would take off to, you know, survey damage after a tornado or to announce some jobs bill or something. You know, he loved the theatrics of it. But yeah, this helicopter
was very popular. He was ahead of his time.
This helicopter was owned by the state of Illinois from 2000 until 2015. And that's when, you may recall, Governor Bruce Rauner actually sold off the state's entire fleet of aircraft, which included helicopters and airplanes. It was a cost-saving move. Helicopter got sold for about $515,000 to the holding company that owned it up until the day of the crash. So it clearly, the helicopter was refurbished interior and out, and it was up to date according to FAA registrations and FAA information on all of its maintenance as it was while it was owned by the state of Illinois. But just kind of an interesting local connection there.
Yeah.
That this helicopter, which is considered, you know, a luxury helicopter, would make its way out to California and then, you know, be, well, it was owned by a holding company out of Van Nuys, California. Clearly, it was Kobe Bryant's personal helicopter.
Right, because it had his logos on it. He had the Nike swoosh, but he also had, for his Mamba thing.
It's like a sheath, an insignia logo.
An insignia logo. And it was seen a lot. I mean, he used it a lot to move back and forth to the Staples Center for basketball games, also to take his kids to basketball practice, which is unfortunately and tragically what appears to have been. They were going to a basketball game or basketball practice, he and his 13-year-old daughter, along with the other people on board who, you know, were friends of the family.
And have their own stories as well, right? It's always, you know, a bit unfortunate in these circumstances when such a high-profile person is killed. It winds up being, you know, Kobe Bryant and 8 others, or Kobe Bryant and his daughter and 7 others. But, yeah, you know, these were, you know, mothers and daughters themselves and fathers and, you know, a family, folks that their deaths are just as tragic. It's just everybody, you know, knew who Kobe Bryant was, and everybody was, yeah, my kids were the ones who told me yesterday they got an alert on their phone and stopped what they were doing.
It was interesting. I was in the grocery store yesterday when the alert came in, and I walked past a guy who was an employee of the store, and he was looking at his phone, and he's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he just walked out of the store.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, what? So I looked at my phone. And I saw
it. By the way, all of the reasons that could be, oh, my God, when you look at a news alert these days.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But it was interesting when I was, so then I was in the store for, you know, half an hour or whatever, and then I'm checking out. And all of the employees had sort of gathered around the cash registers and were all talking about this and talking about their memories of him. You know, I think as Bulls fans and of people who, you know, watch the Jordan, remember the Jordan era very well, I think for that next generation down, Kobe Bryant was as big a player as there has been. And then, of course, you know, you move on to LeBron. But
right.
But Kobe was the dominant figure in the NBA after Jordan. And the whole thing was to go chase down all the Jordan records and Jordan numbers.
It's pretty remarkable to think about. It's a good equivalency, right? Like, he wasn't just a basketball player. He was a brand. He was a force of nature in and of himself.
And, you know, they talked about it. Anna was just talking about it in her show about half an hour ago about his legacy and what is it in the legacy that is, you know, that's good and bad. And there's this controversy now with the Washington Post, because there was a Washington Post political reporter who tweeted out stories about about the affair that he had, or the accusation of sexual assault that happened.
As everyone was sharing, you know, memories and remembrances yesterday, she tweeted a link to an old story from a few years ago looking at some allegations against Kobe Bryant, and took a tremendous amount of heat for it, and has in fact now been suspended from her job.
Right. You know, maybe in those moments, you know, right afterwards, it's not, it's not suspendable. It may not be in the best taste, but there is, you know, because his daughter perished with him, and obviously he had turned around the family thing. He gave one of the most impassioned press conferences. Well, you know, when you go back and you think about what happened in that incident, he was, I believe, in Denver, right? And they were staying at a hotel or at a resort.
It's outside
of Denver, and he made contact with a woman who was working at the front desk when he was checking in, and then somehow she ended up in his room. And it was unclear whether it was at his insistence or hers, but she ended up in the room, and then they had a very quick sexual encounter. She left. She said that, and then a day and a half later, she said that she felt that she had been sexually assaulted by Kobe Bryant, and then first went to try to get his lawyers to she went to personally. Then when that didn't go anywhere, she went to Colorado authorities. And then upon further investigation, the charges were eventually dropped because
she refused to testify.
Right.
And supposedly there was some sort of settlement.
Yes.
With Bryant.
And there were a lot of news stories, if you go back and you look at it at the time, because we covered this pretty extensively when it happened. She had a boyfriend who was then willing to testify about her behavior and stuff. And the whole thing got very weird and got very sordid. And then Kobe had to have the press conference in which he apologized to his wife and to her and to the woman who was accusing him of this. And it was, and he cried. And you saw this guy, if there's one moment. And it was, you can't teach this. It has to be genuine. You can't make a guy cry on television or at a press conference and have that sort of emotional reaction and make it fake. He seemed so genuinely distraught and contrite about what had happened. Mm-hmm. I think it turned a lot of people back around, because at that point, a bunch of people were going to drop him, including Nike and others. As a matter of fact, as I recall, he might not even been at Nike at that point. He might have been at Adidas at that point, but he turned it around, and he was a very solid citizen. Did a lot of really very great things in the Los Angeles community and in the Philadelphia community where he had attended high school. Even though he grew up in Europe primarily as a kid because his dad was a Jelly Bean, was his father's nickname, and was an international basketball player.
But as for this whole notion of should a reporter be suspended for sharing an article about that admittedly low moment in his life, yes, you can argue, well, this is a time for remembrances, but also what's next if you're going to say a reporter shouldn't be sharing a story about that? So then what? Should we not be including that in an obituary?
Yeah, I mean,
because
we
only remember the dead positively.
Right.
If
somebody's a popular figure, only report on positive things.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of where we're heading in a lot of ways with the way that social media reacts to sort of, if I could use the term, bricks and mortar media. You know, the media that actually has buildings and business models.
That we pay for stuff and reporters. That we don't just repurpose and steal other people's stuff for clickbait. Yep.
So in terms of that, there are a lot of questions. I think that's an overreaction by the Washington Post.
Yeah, and they may dial it back. We'll see. So a couple other stories we're covering for you today. Former State Senator Martin Sandoval charged with accepting bribes. Who is Martin Sandoval? He's the guy who basically steered the red light camera laws to allow them to expand in the suburbs. The feds charging today that he was on the take and not only steered legislation to help a suburban red light camera vendor, but also opposed legislation that would have hurt that camera vendor. So this case has been bubbling for months now. We finally have charges in it, and it's not the last we'll hear of it. The other bit of information we're just getting, I know it's a story you kept an eye on this weekend, Ro, the Illinois State Troopers who were killed inside that cigar bar, an Illinois State Trooper, retired, was killed inside that cigar bar over the weekend. Within the last few minutes, Lyle police saying they went to the woman's house who shot at the troopers
right, and then
before taking
her
own life. And they said they had found the words, "I hate you, hope you two die," written on the wall of her condo.
Uh-oh.
They don't yet know of a connection. There was an early report that perhaps she went to high school with one of them. I believe that's now been debunked. But we're just getting that new information in about that tragic shooting involving Illinois State Troopers over the weekend, who were off duty at the time, right, just enjoying a night out. So we'll continue to follow that and bring you the latest.
Thank you so much. Ben Bradley, you can see him on the WGN-TV News starting at 4 o'clock on The Niner. Thank you, sir. We got the WGN Radio News coming your way in 2 minutes. Don't worry, nothing to see here. Nothing going on in Washington, D.C. today. That's why we go to Kelly Meyer, Nexstar Media, Washington, D.C. Bureau. And Kelly, it's there were a lot of drama before the impeachment hearing started again today. This is the defense of the president. His lawyers are getting up, and they have their 24 hours. And I think when they started today, they had 22 hours or something like that left to do, or some amount. They still have plenty of time here, but they have to get it all in 3 days, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So and, we assume they won't be using all their 24 hours then.
No, I think what they set out to do was to, you know, be like they wanted to present an argument much more quickly than they say the House managers did it. They said that they don't need the full, 24 hours over 3 days kind of thing. They said they want to get to the point, make it quick, and be done. And they think that they know that. They know what they want to say about the case. Once they get that out, they say they're fine. They feel comfortable wrapping it up early if they can as well.
Well, then that just moves quicker than to the issue of whether or not they're going to be witnesses. And now the story that New York Times had yesterday, they broke about John Bolton's book. The galleys of the book were sent to the government. There's an office that looks at former government employees' books and make sure that there's no national security issues that are being breached there. And then they sent the manuscript back. The New York Times was told. And in that manuscript, there is a description of the president explaining to Bolton that there was a quid quo pro, apparently, according to Bolton. So now the question is, will Bolton get called up to have to testify about that? And what are you hearing about whether Republicans, they need four Republicans to go along with that? And Romney's already said maybe he'd do it, but what else are we hearing?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest news of today. Like you said, a lot happened going in from over the weekend into today. And, you know, I'm sure the White House just thought they'd be finishing up their arguments, their opening arguments, and then move on, wrap this up, wipe their hands, and then we get on with the State of the Union coming up a week from tomorrow, because they were hoping to wrap this up, this impeachment trial, and be done with it by the time President Trump comes into the House floor next Tuesday night. So what we're looking at now with this new allegations from Bolton in his new book, like you said, saying that, you know, President Trump told him that they didn't want to release the aid to Ukraine until he got some of the investigation into the Bidens. So he mentioned that in this book that came out, and now that Republicans, and specifically some Republicans in the Senate, are hearing it, they say it's increasing their chances to vote for witnesses to come forward, which would then increase the length of this trial, potentially change the course of this trial. But you just don't know. We just don't know how anything could happen by the end of the week. But it is looking like Utah Senator Mitt Romney, we have Maine Senator Susan Collins, and a few other Republicans that have expressed concern, and that they would be leaning towards calling in witnesses. Susan Collins had said she'd done that in 1999 with the Clinton impeachment and trial, so she said she would be willing to do it again this time around. And like you said, you're right, you only need four Republicans to come over to the Democratic side, because of course pretty much all the Democrats have vocally said they want to see more witnesses and new witnesses in the case. So we're kind of waiting to see, but that was a big thing that happened today, you know, running around trying to hear from senators up here what their takeaway is from this. And, of course, some members of the White House legal team from Congress, a lot of the Congress members from the House side, like Mark Meadows or Doug Collins, saying that there's nothing new here, and it's speculation, which is what the White House, the legal team, had said on the Senate floor today as well during the trial.
Right. What is interesting, as you pointed out, Kelly, that there is the State of the Union looms, right? I mean, it's next week.
Yeah.
And so the State of the Union was a moment for a reset. There was another story that came out over the weekend that the White House was telling, I think, Politico that this is part of a reset. You know, they're going to, as soon as this is over, they're going to use the momentum and the energy from this and the attention from this and launch the 2020 campaign in real earnest for the president. So they were going to, you know, the way to stone cap that at the beginning was to do it right at the State of the Union. So we'll see if this thing drags beyond. And then there was also the issue of whether or not there's going to be political revenge on Republicans who do this, because there's a couple of Republicans who are running in the Senate that would have to make a decision here. And then there's guys who are not running, like Romney is, you know, senator until 2024. Right. So it doesn't really affect him. All right.
Right.
At least
it comes into play their states and the elections and who they represent and the oath they took when they came into this a couple weeks ago. So there's a lot on their shoulders at this moment.
Kelly Meyer, Washington correspondent for Nextar Media. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies?
Radio Chicago.
It's the Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. I want to drag Kevin into this. I love what the Chicago Bulls have done here with their tribute to Kobe Bryant. They've now lit up the United Center. They're playing tonight at the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
And they've lit up the United Center in L.A. Lakers colors.
Yep.
And the images on the big vertical boards that are out at the United Center that, you know, if there's a hockey game, you go up and you see all the Hawks players, you know, these glory shots of them, you know, sort of the whole side of the building now. If you've not been near there recently, the whole side, all the sides of the building are basically gigantic video boards.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got images of Kobe up, right?
Yeah, it's all purple and gold. And as you said, there's images of Kobe Bryant. They're planning on some sort of tribute before the game. Some teams yesterday were doing intentionally running out the 24 shot clock and taking it because his number was 24, of course, or doing an 8-second backcourt violation. Kobe has two numbers retired at Staples Center, which I thought the Grammys last night did a good job of working Kobe in throughout the broadcast. I mean, considering the circumstances, all things considered, there was some tribute in the beginning. They had his jerseys lit up in the rafters. His jersey was kind of shown throughout the broadcast as well. So everybody's doing a little something. And, you know, keep in mind the NBA All-Star game is here in a couple of weeks. And I'm guessing, I haven't heard anything, but that's probably going to turn into one long tribute for Kobe Bryant when the entire basketball world's here in Chicago. And I don't mean to keep tying in Jordan, because every time I've talked about it, I keep bringing up Michael Jordan. But, like, you know, you were talking about different eras for people. People grew up in the Jordan era or the Kobe era. You know, I caught sort of the back end of that Jordan era, and then it was like all of a sudden Kobe Bryant. So, and if you go back, there's been some crazy videos that have been released on social media or news outlets, people just remembering all things Kobe, of how much Kobe modeled his game after Jordan. There's some side-by-side videos where they look identical. Kobe modeled his game after Jordan, the way he had approached the game. You always hear about how Jordan was such a competitor and never let up, and he was such a fierce competitor. It's kind of everything you're hearing about Kobe Bryant as well. So I think there is that link from the Bulls and Kobe and Jordan and all that. So I love what the United Center is doing. I hope they leave it like that for at least a week or at least a few days, because I don't know. I feel like that the Jordan legacy kind of transitioned into the Kobe era, so they're all kind of tied together.
Now, for sure. It was at Kobe's first game at the United Center when he came back, or when Jordan had come back, and I think it was the 97 season, if I'm not mistaken, 96 or 97. And it was a weird game because the whole thing was, all those games in that era were standing room only games, but there was a special energy in the room because this kid who was like 12, right? I mean, he went to high school and he came right. One of the last guys, LeBron, is
youngest player ever to debut in the NBA.
Right. And he shows up and everybody wanted to see what this phenom was about. And he was impressive. I mean, he was not, as you often see in the NBA, these guys are like, they're like bean poles. And then the next thing you know, a couple of years later, they get some mass on them. I don't know how they do that in the NBA, and I don't want to know, quite honestly. But he was technically so great. The weird thing about that game, though, was that Dennis Rodman had a record number of threes for his career. No one was paying attention to him, and he wasn't paying attention to Kobe. So he was out on the three-point line, and he kept hitting them. So I don't, whatever he took that night, he should have kept taking that too.
He was feeling the energy.
There was a really warm reception because as Kobe was touring, it was like when Michael Jordan in that era would go to any other stadium, they would sell out that stadium. People just wanted to see the Bulls of that era and specifically Michael Jordan. Kobe did the same thing for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Kobe became this when he was a rookie, he was a sensation, and then it just continued on. Then obviously they started to build a team around him, and the ownership of the LA Lakers and Jerry West, who was the general manager, did a really good job of finding ways to build a core around him or build other stars around him because you needed that. You just can't live on one guy.
Yeah, when you look at his legacy, you know, he won those championships when he had Shaq, and everyone said, well, he can't do it without Shaq. And then, little different than Jordan's two separate three-peats, but he basically did it with two separate teams, right? I mean, Jordan did it with two
except Scottie Pippen was the same.
Scottie Pippen, and there were some other carryovers as well here and there. But for the most part, the entire team was different, and then everyone's like, well, Kobe can't do it alone, and then he did. He won two more on his own. I mean, he had some great players around him.
Yes.
But I think that was really when he cemented his legacy. Okay, this guy's right up there with some of the best ever. And the thing that I think was a gut punch for a lot of people, recently you've seen more and more of him. A lot of guys retire and you don't hear a bunch from them, right? And that's fine. They can just go live their life or whatever. But Kobe was very much in the forefront. And especially, I mean, the guy won an Oscar just a couple years ago. And if you watch that, his Dear Basketball short film, which won for best short film in 2018.
Best animated short.
God, that's tough to watch. If you watched it yesterday, it's because it's just so passionate about how much he loved basketball. And it was clear that whatever the guy was going to do after basketball, he was going to be great at it. And he was a champion for women's basketball because he had his daughter Gianna, who was on the flight with him, who was an avid basketball player. There were some great clips of him talking about how people kept coming up to him saying he had to have a boy to carry on the legacy. And his daughter would always be like, hold on a second, I can carry on the legacy. So you can tell he was really invested into being a dad and all of that post-basketball. It just, it's unbelievable. It still doesn't feel real.
The immediate reaction, because when things like this happen, everybody goes into full coverage. The networks are going into full coverage. ESPN went into full coverage last night or yesterday, and then they popped up an instant special.
Yeah,
you know, with Michael Strahan, who is required to appear in everything now, no matter what it is, no matter whether you ever met Kobe or not. I don't know what, but Robin Roberts, I understand. I understood her because she spent a lot of time with Kobe. She had a lot of archival footage of she and Kobe sitting down in and around all of these issues, the good and the bad. And it was really, I was surprised at how emotional I became.
I know.
About it. When I saw the reaction of these young kids who, and that was the thing, and I mentioned this earlier, I went to the grocery store yesterday when this news broke, and it was breaking while I was in the grocery store. And how does news break now? On your phone. Right? All the kids are looking at it on their phone. All the kids are working at the grocery store, primarily African-American kids. Their reaction was, and I know that, and they're in that generation. They're in the generation that really didn't see Michael Jordan play. They know who he is. But Kobe was the biggest star for them, and then on to LeBron. And it is, and Kobe, there was something about Kobe that was different than, I think, a lot of professional athletes and NBA players and things like that, because he carried himself differently. He was a second-generation NBA guy. He grew up, you know, his formative years were in Europe. He had to learn a bunch of different languages. He didn't have, you know, sort of an American childhood. And a lot of kids who end up, you know, whether their parents are in foreign service or the military or missionaries or whatever it is, they tend to have a little bit of a different take because they're not just products of an American town or city or whatever it happens to be. They see themselves as global citizens in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And he carried himself like that. And that was a really unique thing that he brought, especially at a moment when the NBA was going totally international with their players. He could speak half the languages those guys were coming in with.
I know. A lot of people were pointing that out to yesterday, how much he was involved with spreading the international brand. I mean, as much as the Jordan brand, as global as that is, Kobe had a big hand in China and spreading the brand over there as well. So it's an international player. It's you know, when celebrities go, however they do, there's... I don't know. Yesterday was just such a gut punch to me. I don't know exactly what it was. Maybe because for 20 years,
you don't expect it.
And it doesn't. It comes out of nowhere.
For people who are watching the Pro Bowl, they came back from halftime, and it was Joe Tessitore, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Tessitore and Booger.
Yep.
And the Monday Night Football crew. And they were talking about the news. You know, there's obviously there's an overshadow here of the news that has just broken. And this is within an hour of the news breaking. And they are both parents of daughters, and they couldn't talk about the other people that were on the helicopter. The idea was that you know, Kobe is dead, and then of course who he was with, but we don't want to go there right now. I can't go there. And they both stopped and they were weeping. And it was a strange moment because you can't go anywhere. The football game has started. You know, it's not like you can take a break and have people. And they had to just stop. And it was silent for 10 or 15 seconds, which is like an eternity in television. And they were able to compose themselves and continue on. I think that was the other piece, too. You know, he was with his daughter, his 13-year-old daughter. And then there was all this video that came out yesterday of he and his 13-year-old daughter and going through, you know, her becoming this ascendant child basketball prodigy.
And a video just went viral, if you want to call it, just a couple weeks ago of them two sitting courtside. And it was pretty clear he was giving her some sort of coaching lesson right there.
Yeah.
And the front row was there watching a game.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of the, and you know, for the good and the bad and all the things that happened with Kobe, it's, you know, it's a moment where people who live in the public eye, so rarely do they come out unscathed. You know, there's very, for every Tom Hanks, there are
100 other,
you know, 100 Dennis Rodmans or whatever, you know, you want to say, right? Yeah. But there was something about the way that he came away from that. I know that we were talking about with Lauren earlier, that the way he came back from that moment, the accused sexual assault, which ended up getting settled out of court, and there was a lot of controversy around that on both sides. But it was relatively quick, but he stayed with his wife. His wife stayed with him. They continued to raise their family together. And he had just last week had written, or 2 weeks ago, he'd written on social media this like love letter to her. I mean, it's that I will never forget in that press conference when he broke down and said, you know, baby, you're my oxygen, and he couldn't get through those words. It was so real and so human. It just was almost impossible to not stop and have compassion for everybody in the situation at that moment.
Yeah, you know, as much as Kobe's linked to Michael Jordan, LeBron is very much linked to Kobe. And how about him moving past Kobe Saturday night on the points list? And LeBron in his post game gives about a 5-minute speech response to reporters about his love for Kobe, and talks about all the things Kobe has done for him. And then just hours later, Kobe's gone. Kobe's last tweet was directed towards LeBron James, encouraging him to keep going and doing all those great things.
Want a little trash talk between Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant from the All-Star game? Listen to this.
I just foul all day long.
Oh, I know you ain't talking. I know you ain't talking.
Hey, you only got three now. I got six. I would get that foul. You only got three now.
I know where you're going. You got to get up quick.
If you knew where I was going, why you go for the face?
Mike, after you face the ball, where else you going?
You left your feet.
Yeah, but where else you going to go?
In the game, I go for you.
I spun all the way around.
I go for these ribs right here.
That's all right. Hey, you know, I shoot them better when the clock going down.
Wow. I mean, just that two greats, right? And what is amazing about it is that's a half generation younger Kobe Bryant giving it right back to the greatest basketball player of all times. That's a pretty amazing moment. So, well, obviously, you know, I understand. I know people are wondering why they're so emotional about this, I think, why it is such a gut punch. But just know that a lot of us feel that way as we're trying to get through our Sunday and into our Monday. It's the Ro Khan Show on 720 WGN. Keep listening this hour. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Bruins Wednesday, February 5th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. And tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Chicago Blackhawks tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. That's our first day back, first night back at the United Center after the long All-Star game break. And then the flex week or whatever they call it. All right, Kevin Olivall is with us. He's a doctor. Thank God we need one. Virus hunter and vice president for research at Echo Health Alliance. And Kevin, we were talking last week about the Wuhan virus and where does that where it's moving to, how it has exploded in China now. But we had our first confirmed case, I think, last week when we were talking, and now we have this. We had the Chicago case. What are there, five in the United States now total?
Yeah, that's right. And Ro, thanks for having me again. There's currently five imported cases that I know of in the United States.
So one of the things that Chinese officials are saying about the Wuhan virus is that they are warning people that you might be contagious before you actually exhibit the symptoms. Is that true? And how much of a that seems like an incredibly dangerous way to create this vector?
Yeah, you know, that is a challenge when there is transmission before people know they're really sick. It does happen with flu. It happens with colds as well. So it's not completely unusual for a virus to have some level of transmission before you're really, you know, in bed and coughing and sneezing. There's a lot we don't know. I think, you know, that's a suggestion. I think some of the data might suggest that's the case, and we heard that, you know, coming out of some officials and some experts. So I think it hasn't really been proven, but I think people are suggesting that could be the case.
Right, because the coronavirus is a cold virus, right? This one just happens to be incredibly virile.
Yeah, there's a diversity of coronaviruses. I mean, you know, SARS, of course, was a coronavirus, which was similar to this, a new emerging coronavirus that the human population had never seen before. But there are several other coronaviruses. They have names, you know, catchy names like 229E.
right, bad marketing.
Things like that that are typically more upper respiratory, kind of cold-like. Yeah. You know, infections.
Well, you know, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, because obviously there are at least 82 people dead, 2,800 infected in China at last count. But it is important to market these. It is important to give them a name. It's important for people to be able to connect with what it was. Like, a decade ago, it was the H1N1 virus. And people were like, wait, what is that? Mm-hmm. Mean? It sounds too scientific. Mm-hmm. It sounds too much. It doesn't sound real. But when you give it a name, when it's, you know, coming from a region or whatever it happens to be, even coronavirus, I think is a little heavy for people to understand. The real issue, the real differential here, as I see it, and please tell me if I'm right or I'm wrong, because I'm, you know, just looking at this, that it's that the death rate here seems to be consistent at about 3%, and as a 3% death rate, that's three times what the flu death rate is, but that's certainly not like a pandemic where half the people are going to get it or going to die kind of outbreak. Right.
Yeah. We're right now. The case fatality rate, as we say, is about 3%, which means of the cases we know of, right, of the confirmed cases, 3% have been fatal. But you know, I take that with a little caution. You're right. It's pretty much as new numbers come out, they've sort of the denominator and the numerator have balanced each other out, and so we're staying at around 3%. But there's there's a large number of cases that are very mild and not symptomatic, and those people aren't getting tested. Well, that would even push the rate even lower because right. There's more cases than there are people dying. So these numbers are going to keep changing, but you're right. It's not an extremely pathogenic and lethal virus like, say, Ebola is, where, you know, 30-40% of people could die.
Last week when we were talking to you, because you are an expert in this kind of, you're the virus hunter, so you're out there looking for things like this. You said when we talked about your concern, because it was relatively new, and that, you know, it is exponential in terms of numbers in China. Nowhere else at this point, really. I mean, these little sporadic places are pretty stable. You are at a 7 on a 1 to 10 scale of being alarmed. I'm always at a 12 on a 1 to 10 scale being alarmed about everything. But you were at a 7, and that, you know, that put me to a 14 because, you know, you're an expert in this. Are you still as alarmed, or where are you now? One to ten.
I'm about, yeah, I think I was a little bit on heightened alert when we spoke last week. I think that was even before the first case was detected in Chicago.
Right.
But, you know, I'm about the same level right now. I mean, I think it's an evolving, rapidly evolving situation, obviously. The numbers keep changing. It is moving around quite a bit. But like you said, there's room for optimism, which is, you know, one, you know, we're actually quite a bit ahead of where we were in terms of the science and treatments and vaccine than we were with SARS. So because of the lesson with SARS, it kind of gave us a bit of a head start in thinking about how do you control and deal with some of these new viruses that are related. So I think that's a positive thing. I think, like you said, the mortality rate is relatively low compared to some other emerging diseases. That's a positive thing. And, you know, there's a lot of great people around the world, public health experts, working to contain this. And that, you know, I think there's a lot of fear right now. But we're looking at the numbers and what we know, while it's scary, it's not catastrophic at this point.
Got it. Kevin Olivelle. We'll talk to you next week. We'll see if we've moved up or we've moved down. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. I appreciate it.
And
thank you.
Virus Hunter and President for Research at Echo Health Alliance. All right. Something that is actually making people sick here is the weather, giving them depression in January. We're going to talk to a Northwestern Medicine doc about that coming up next. But first, Lauren, what's happening in the traffic and the weather?
A tense moment in recent history, preserved in art, inspired by the Chicago school closings, how an artist transforming the things left behind. Tuesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Oh, very important.
Don't miss it, Ro.
It did sound like something that was very... I got to rush right to that. All right. But by the way, Hawks tickets coming up in just a few minutes. See them when they return to the United Center after this long All-Star break layoff next Wednesday, the 5th, against the Bruins. That's, you know, 06, baby. Right? Right. Thank you. Okay. Now, there's a story today about the weather in this January, though we had some pretty nice days. When you get a lockdown this time of year, you're after the holidays, it's still cold and it's still dark, gets dark early relatively. Even though I always look up in the sky to figure out at 5 o'clock, that's my, oh my God, it's finally 5 o'clock and there's still enough blue in the sky, so there's almost light there. And by the end of this week, I think that the sundown is going to be at like 5 o'clock, right? I think by Friday. So that makes a big difference, because one of the worst things about Chicago is that it is so far east in the central time zone that the sun goes down. I mean, it gets dark at 3:30 during the winter. That has an amazing effect on a lot of people. And seasonal affective disorder is a big and real thing. And Dr. Allison Johnson, or actually, you're a licensed clinical counselor and board certified.
Clinical professional counselor.
Right. I was.
How about that?
That's even better. But I called you a doctor. I'm not sure you're a doctor, so I don't want to, you know.
I wish.
Okay. So, and you know, you're seeing patients who are going through. There's a lot of things in the environment right now that are causing anxiety, right? The news cycle, and there's other things that are happening, whether it's, you know, the coronavirus scares a lot of people like me, there's the political stuff that's going on, just also a grander sense of people aren't getting along with each other the way that they used to get along with each other, and then the weather kicks in. What's the biggest piece of that bubble for you right now?
Piece for me personally?
Well, for your, what are you seeing? What are you seeing in your practice?
What we're seeing is in general, a trend where anxiety is becoming more and more prevalent, especially with our teenage population. That's just a cultural trend that's happening over time in the last decade. So, did you want to talk about that, or more about what's happening in seasonals? It's up to you.
We can do it all. Okay. But let's talk about the kids here for a second. One of the reasons that you're seeing that, is that a social media related thing?
Well, I don't have any research on that, but I think they're starting to study that. But it definitely correlates with the onset of, you know, every kid having a cell phone.
Yeah. And then all the pressure that is incumbent upon that, right?
Yeah. A lot of inputs, kids, generally speaking, don't get enough sleep anyway when they're teenagers because their bodies tend to like to stay up late at night and sleep in, and that's just not how their school days run. And so they're short on sleep anyway in the teen years unless they're super careful about that. And then, you know, if you got a cell phone and you're paying attention every time it pings in the middle of the night and who's got a text for who, I don't know how much sleep people are getting.
Yeah.
So, you know, sleep is huge for everyone as far as avoiding or, you know, keeping mental health healthy on the healthy side.
What is a healthy amount of sleep per night?
It depends on how old you are and kind of what your personality type is. But I would say the experts would probably say it's going to be at least 6 hours at least. And that's on the low side. To some people need more like 9, 10.
Mm-hmm. I need about 14. I don't know if that seems normal at this point. but you know, you described me as a teenager, and then I just realized to myself, yeah, I'm pretty much the same way.
Yeah,
never was able.
Still.
I never was able to not go to bed late and then have to get up. You know, if I had to get up early, it's a great crisis because.
Well,
a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. I think it depends on who you are, too. So some people are night people and some people are early risers. And that kind of goes throughout lifetime, so you can deal, but, you know, that's your preference.
All right, let's go back to the how I started this whole thing, or how we called you to start this whole thing, which is the seasonal affective disorder piece. So January, this is that time where people really start to feel the onset of cabin fever.
Mm-hmm. It is. Now, if you're seasonal affective disorder, if you got a tough case of it, it's usually going to start bothering you in October. And if you're not taking good care of it, then it'll just progress and get worse. So perhaps some people feel it's worsening this time of year. And that could be true if they haven't been taking good care of themselves and know how to compensate for it. Other people, it's more just can be more like, yeah, everybody's got cabin fever. Yeah, we're all tired of the, you know, 5 months of gray that Chicago experiences, it seems to, between November and March or so. And so after the holidays and, you know, we're just slogging through the rest of winter in this light the way it is, if you're not doing anything to really help yourself, if you don't understand how your body reacts to that and what, you know, things you can do even to accept it, you know, and say, hey, like you do, you know, hey, it's getting lighter every day. Every day after December 21st, it's getting lighter. That's how also I do it, too. It's like, yeah, you know what? It's still light right now, and it's 4:26.
Oh, Allison Johnson from Northwestern Medicine. Let me just tell you something. You are overestimating me when I look outside. I mean, it's crazy. I take every little minute, but it's very upsetting. I mean, the lack of light in this area. And again, it does go to our position in mm-hmm. the central time zone. I mean, it is, there has been talk here about mm-hmm. moving over to the eastern time zone, or at least ditching the whole idea of going back to central time, which I fully support because, mm-hmm. you know, when you live in a place where it gets dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for months at a time, I mean, it gets dark at 8 o'clock at night for months at a time too. That's great. Right? I mean, that's the way we like it. But this mm-hmm. It's really tough. What can you do? You just mentioned there are things you can do to take care of yourself. What are those things?
Well, one is to understand what you need to counterbalance it. Some people, it really helps. Like, we're talking about brain chemistry. This is not imaginary. So, you know, when the light changes, our circadian rhythms can change. Our melatonin levels can change. A lot of things can change. So it's real. It's a biochemical reaction in your brain that starts to, you know, slog you down. So one thing that works really well for biochemistry in one's brain, too, is exercise. And if there's, you know, that really helps a lot of people. Another thing that can be done is you can use those light boxes, phototherapy. And that's real. That really does help. And a lot of people use that. Even people who have jet lag use that with good effect. You have to use a certain type of light box. It needs to be for this specific purpose. So you want to look for something that has 10,000 LUX. That's the kind of light you need. And people use this in the morning. So you wouldn't want to use it when you normally would be sleeping. You want to use it when you'd normally want to be awake. So you know, 20 or 30 minutes while you're reading in the morning, having your first cup of coffee, whatever it is you do, can really set people up for a good day because you're providing light to, you know, your optimal, your optic nerve, and then it goes into various body systems and helps stimulate the adrenals, et cetera, and it really does help a lot of people.
I'm not getting paid to say this, but so I shall say it anyway, though. I've been using this for years. It is amazingly effective.
It is.
Amazingly effective. I mean, because what it does is it tricks you almost, you feel it working actually, because it tricks the optic nerve into seeing sunlight or reacting to what it assumes is sunlight. And then it actually sends, you know, it's just firing all kinds of synapses in your brain and firing all kinds of other adrenal reactions. So it does actually work. And you do that in combination with exercise, which I'd only do half. And then also this time of year, too, there are people who, you know, you're coming off the holidays, right? And there's that whole, there's the stress of the holidays, but also there's the sort of the enjoyment of everybody getting together and, you know, the anticipation that there's going to be a positive thing that happens. And then either it does or it doesn't. Then you head off into this and you're still left in the same environment, weather-wise and light-wise. But nothing to look forward to.
Right. So how can you create something to look forward to? You know, I know some people who, you know, deal with SAD every year, and part of their own self-treatment is that's when they take a vacation south.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, they get to the equator, or they get down into the Caribbean or whatever, Texas, wherever they can go, and they get their dose of sunlight this time of year. That helps them a lot to look forward to that. The other thing that a lot of people may not be aware of, physicians are quite aware of this, and even dermatologists are starting to tell people that we should all be getting on, you know, all of us Northern Hemisphere types should be getting on a good healthy dose of vitamin D on a regular basis, and particularly across the winter months, because vitamin D, without enough of that, if we have deficiencies, we can feel depressed. So, you know, even in the summertime now, we're all slather up with sunscreen, which can block some of the sun's beneficial rays for us and provide us our vitamin D. And if we're not big milk drinkers that has, you know, vitamin D additives, we might not be getting enough. So it absolutely can't hurt you to take a vitamin D supplement. And if you're, you know, at risk for SAD or you're feeling blah, you should take a look at that.
All right. That's good advice. Allison, thank you so much. Allison Johnson, licensed clinical counselor and board-certified coach at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Now to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Not related. Here's Kim Gordon with the news. It's the Rokan Show right here. 312-981-7200. That is our telephone number. 312-981-7200. Caller number 19 rips us off for tickets, pair of tickets to go see Hawks take on the Bruins when they return to the United Center after a triumphant 2 weeks off, essentially, is what it is for them. They will be, they're back playing Saturday night. Isn't that right, Kev? Kevin disappeared. I looked up into the screen. Kevin gone. Lauren, isn't that correct that that they're playing Saturday night? You're the next best thing, actually, to that, because you actually know more about them than Kevin does.
That would
be
correct.
Yeah. All right. Okay, thank you. 312-981-7200, Boston, next Wednesday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, for all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. All right. Joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, and I think I don't think I'm overstating this, Mark Maxwell, NextStar Capital Springfield Bureau Chief, is with us. And a couple things are going on here. First, I want to ask you, the governor today was asked a question because the legislative session is going to start tomorrow and there's going to be all kinds of stuff. All I care about, Mark, I swear to God, all I care about is getting the online gambling going. I don't know when they're going to do that. I don't know why they're taking so much time to get this thing done, but that's all I wanted. I don't care about the public works projects or anything else like that, unless they want to raise our taxes. Are they going to raise our taxes?
Well, Real, first of all, great to be with you. I got to say, you got to lower the expectations of your audience here. The Super Celebrity Hotline, that's a little bit steep there.
But, I know it is.
You know, The raising of taxes, if that comes, we probably would only see that toward the end of session. We're thinking about May. There's a lot more anticipation around this push to lower property taxes. How does the state get at that when that decision is made at the local level, at so many different local levels of government? So the state is really trying to come together with some sort of comprehensive solution to lowering the property taxes. The hitch, that's going to likely be offset by the progressive income tax in that big calculation down the line. So for people who make north of $250,000 a year, that probably means they may kick in a higher income tax rate if, of course, voters approve of that at the ballot box in November. But those are some of the bigger tax issues. We haven't seen a lot of other motion. And to your question about the online gaming, you know, Governor Pritzker got to make some appointments to the gaming board. I suppose he could make a call and kick them in the seat of the pants to spur things a bit there. But I think with some of the recent unsavory elements we've seen in Illinois government, they're trying to be careful that they don't miss anything, and they're going through things with a fine-tooth comb, because I think what they want the least right now at the Illinois Gaming Board is any more negative headlines or any unsavory elements there.
Yes, right. it's Illinois, Mark. I mean, that is why we invented the unsavory element on a gaming board. You thought it was New Jersey. No. It was Illinois. That's Otto Kerner, the governor of Illinois, who went to jail in the early 1970s, because of corruption on the gaming board, on the racing board, as it was known back then, because we didn't have casinos. So just so you know, that's it's a long stand. It's a generational thing. It's almost, you know, it's like 50 years ago we had the same problem. All right. Let me ask you this, because there are many, a lot of people were predicting that this was going to happen. Motor voter, which is passed, you know, state by state around the country, where you can register to vote just by getting a driver's license. That was a big deal, initiative. Almost 20 years ago, this initiative started. And Democrats really loved the idea. Republicans really hated the idea, because Republicans were saying, well, this is going to be a way that people who are not actually couldn't vote, whether they're because they're underage because they're 16, or because they are maybe not citizens, because in Illinois you don't have to be a citizen of the United States to get a driver's license. As a matter of fact, it's encouraged so that you can get auto insurance. Even if you're not here legally, they want to do that. So then all of a sudden we find out last week that when they were doing motor voter, they weren't checking against actual citizenship, and there were hundreds, perhaps thousands, the number is still a little bit of a mystery, of people who got voting rights here through their driver's license who are not eligible for it. Governor today was asked at a press conference, right?
Yeah, he was. And the governor has expressed, I think, some reluctance. Well, first of all, he supported the ongoing investigation, and he said, look, it was a total of about 16 people total who actually cast a ballot. A few of them, maybe three of them, actually turns out were citizens and just checked that box in error and said they were not a citizen. But you're correct. I mean, there really is no requirement to show an ID or driver's license at the ballot box, and there's no federal database to cross-reference. But the sort of safety check mark there is that when you sign up for a driver's license, you have to attest to your citizenship. And a spokesman for the State Board of Elections told me just last week that, indeed, that's truthfully based on the honor system. But for a non-citizen to cast a ballot and intentionally register to vote would be an act of voter fraud, and that usually comes with swift and instant deportation. So there are heavy risks involved, and I suppose in this case the state caught it, and now they're working to root that part out. But political fallout is just beginning. You saw the Illinois GOP chair today suggest that maybe it was intentional.
Republicans had, especially Republican political types, people who run campaigns, were the first to scream that this was going to be a problem, It was the idea to stop this was in order to scare people into the notion that it's going to get cheated. Like in Illinois, it's going to get cheated. And it turns out, whether it got cheated by intentional design or just not handled right, that's a 50-50 in this state, right? It could go either way, for sure. The interesting thing about this, though, is that now they're saying, well, that's been changed. Well, the reason that's been changed is because of the new Real ID. Because in order to get a Real ID, when you're going back in to get a new driver's license now, you have to prove up who you are as an American citizen, not because of the citizen rules, but because of the rules of IDs and flying and all the rest of it, just national security issues. So that solves the problem immediately, theoretically.
It certainly seems that, it seems that Congress and state governments are sort of inching their way ever closer to some sort of system where they can cross-reference citizenship. You'd think in this era of technology and, automated, artificial intelligence and, quantum computing that we could figure out who is a citizen and who is not fairly quickly. But government seems to be a little bit behind that curve right now. But again, there is no standard test or cross-reference currently. It really is based on that trust factor. And so you also see human error come into play. I would say that there's no immediate evidence, and there's no available evidence that any outcome of any election in 2018 or 2019 was altered or changed because of those 13 to 16 voters. And if one was going to intentionally cheat to tilt an election, I imagine they'd do so on a bit of a greater scale, right?
Well, one would hope, especially here in the state of Illinois. Yeah. All right, Mark, thanks very much. Mark Maxwell, Nextar, Capital Bureau Chief. In Springfield, Illinois. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. All right. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and the skies? It's the Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. I noticed in Kim's News, she had been talking about this child bride story where, some of this is not funny because some of it is like it's super forced and bad. But in other cases, I don't quite understand exactly what is going on here. But there it. In Indiana, they are working on legislation to keep people from getting married unless they're 18 years old. I would like to point out something. I don't think you should be allowed to get married until you're 30. That is, I think that would be the minimum age that you should get married at. But 18, I'm like, I thought that was a law. But apparently, in Indiana, you can get married. You don't have to be 18 to get married. And if you have parental consent, right, you can get married. It 14 or something like that?
I think it was 15, but you can't have sex until you're 16.
Even though you're married.
Correct.
Right. But even at that, it would be in cases like with statutory rape, I think starts at 17 here, under 17 in Illinois. So that the idea here was that like child brides, people are getting married into these relationships. There was this one story that NBC pushed today in Mississippi, this 15-year-old who was forced to marry a 43-year-old guy by her family. And I think that happens. That happens in insular religious communities. And there's a big story also in the last week about some of the unspoken and unrealized by the outside world things that are going on in some of the Amish communities in the country in terms of incest and child bride and those kinds of things that go on that they're so insular and they're so within their own community that there's really no way that law enforcement can crack in and get in the way of that. And now they're starting to find out because there are people who are getting away, coming out of the community and telling the stories about what was actually going on in there. But it's interesting because Indiana does also have a fairly substantial community of people who are Amish and Mennonite and people like that have those insulated kind of communities. I think this just struck me especially Kim, when you said it, because it was like, wait a second, Indiana, we've always had our doubts about Indiana for other reasons.
Well, and I'm from Kentucky, and it just recently was changed in Kentucky, so Indiana's not alone in this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously this in the story out of Mississippi is the same case where you can get, you get at 15, actually at 14, you can get married in Mississippi as long as your parents sign off on it. I mean, that is bonkers crazy. That's how it's not 18 is beyond my understanding of how any of this could possibly be good for anybody. And it's not like there's an economic reality to it anymore. A life expectancy reality. If it was true in the 1780s, fine. But it's the 2020s. People live into their 90s on a regular basis. People are there's technology. You don't have to have a child when you're 16. As a matter of fact, you see the ways that that kind of that statistic can actually be detrimental to communities.
Well, you know, you can't drink till you're 21. You can't smoke, but you can get married at 14. Like, how does that work?
Does not. It does not. And again, it ends up creating a circumstance where what would otherwise be an illegal activity, a 43-year-old involved with a 15-year-old would clearly be a case of statutory rape. But if you get a marriage certificate, because somehow that's okay, because the parents were okay with it, I mean, it's... Well, the whole thing is just creepy as hell. But there are going to be people out there that are going to fight on the other side of this. There always are, and I never understand it when it's just so clearly logical. And the stories that are coming out are in a lot of, whether it's the story last week about the Amish community or it's the, you know, this story that NBC is pushing out today about this girl down in Mississippi. I mean, there's finally we're looking at this, and this isn't a situation of like sex trafficking or human trafficking, which in and of itself has its problems. This is a community-based problem where people are being set up into relationships that they really shouldn't be. I mean, it's absolutely astounding to me. By 1990, in this particular case, this woman who's become sort of she's an example that is being used now by those who are trying to get these laws changed. This case where she actually got married when she was 15, she had to wait. This is amazing. She got married at 15. She actually had to wait to get divorced until she was 18. Now stop and think about that for a second. It was okay for her to get married, but it's not okay if she's old enough to get married, not old enough to get divorced. That is an absolutely crazy, crazy, crazy situation.
And how does the kid at that age even understand what all that means, you know, for the long term in your future?
Well, actually, for that, for sure. Well, I don't think anybody I would make the argument that you know, people very rarely think about their futures, but they're emotionally hopeful about their futures. You know, they don't necessarily think about the long term ramifications.
Right, but you don't even understand that remotely at that age.
No, but it's a horrifying trap to be put into. And again, some of these young girls who have been into these forced marriages with these older men, they never experienced normal growing up, whether it's normal dating or going to parties or breaking up or you know, going to prom in high school, going to college or any of that stuff. It's nothing. I mean, they're shunted into a totally different life. And by adults who should know better, whether they're adults that are custodial or parental or whatever it is, and then by the old creep that's marrying them. Thing is, it just ain't right. And I hope that Indiana moves quickly on this, because I cannot imagine. I'd like to find the Indiana politician who is opposed to changing this law. Right? What possible excuse could there be? But there will be, honest to God, there will be some holdout when the vote comes through in Indiana to change the law so that you have to be 18 to get married. There'll be somebody that's, you know, saying that, you know, that's a violation of somebody's human rights. Not the woman's human rights, but the guy's human rights, which is just appalling. All right. Well, there you have it. That's just the creepy story of the day. I think we're going to lighten things up on the other side. After 5 o'clock, we got a top 5 at 5 that you will not believe, including a bit of the tribute to Kobe Bryant. We're going to talk about Kobe a little bit later on in the program as well. We did earlier. And some of the wackiness of the Grammys last night will make it into the top 5 at 5 as well. And also, John Cass is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. He was at the Tribune. They have an editorial board meeting, and they had the editorial board meeting talking about the issue of the state's attorney's race, and they had Kim Fox. I said Kim Fox. I said Megan Fox earlier for reasons that I'm just a big fan of Megan Fox, I guess. Kim Fox, who is running for state's attorney against the young man who's all over television, Mr. Conway. You see him all the time on the TV telling you about his bona fides, as they like to say. And it was really interesting. They got into a big fight. And John will tell you exactly what happened coming up right after this.
For Chicago's most accurate forecast, join me, Demetrius Ivory, and the WGN weather team around the clock on AM 720 and at WGNradio.com.
WGN Radio Chicago. It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we'll do exactly that. Top five most important or entertaining or significant things that happened in the audio world in the last 24 hours.
Number five.
So the governor says that he sees no reason to halt the state's automatic voter registration system after hundreds of non-citizens were mistakenly registered to vote. State automatically registered people when they applied for a driver's license, part of the Motor Voter Act that was passed here in Illinois. That's a state-by-state act that has been offered to states for the last, has been encouraged for states to adopt for the last 20 years by Democrats, unless the you can opt out when you go, but you have to ask to opt out. You have to go and say, hey, I want a new driver's license, but I don't want to vote through that. And who would do that? Unless, of course, you know, you're not from, you understand the rules, you're not from the United States, you're like, I don't want to get in trouble for that. He said that an error had resulted in the data of 574 people who self-identified as non-citizens to be sent to state elections officials to be registered to vote. The governor said that the problem, it's all fixed now, all fixed.
The glitch that was found by the Secretary of State's office and that was investigated has been overcome, it appears, and this automatic voter registration bill that passed, the law that's in place, was a bipartisan effort. Everybody here, Republicans and Democrats, wants to make sure that it works, and we're working very hard to ensure that it's a smooth rollout across government and that the glitch that was discovered is fully taken care of.
You know, JB's only been governor now. He's going on his second year as governor, and it's interesting. He's learned to do the political two-step right there. That was a lateral slide, a rhetorical lateral slide, because the glitch is solved because they got to have the real ID now. When you go to the Secretary of State's office to get your driver's license, you got to get the real ID. And in order to get the real ID, you have to show them a birth certificate, or you got to show them your passport, all things that would indicate that you're an American citizen. So it by de facto takes care of itself. It is not, or default, I would say. Yes, that's what I meant. Default. I knew it had the D and F. By default, it's finished. It's taken care of. But that doesn't actually accommodate the people who are trying to go get the IDs before the real ID became the way that you're going to update your driver's license. So it's just one of those situations where the political winds, you know, have been blowing back and forth between Republicans and Democrats about this, and Democrats wanted it, and Republicans said, no, we don't want it because illegals are going to be able to vote and blah, 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 and the Democrats are going to cheat. Now this happens, and it proves the point that Republicans were trying to make. Even if it was an accident, it's politically not going to get played like that. So, there you go. People got to be more careful, unless it was a plot. And I'm not above plots at this point.
Number four.
WGN's political report got an inside look over recent clashes between the City Council's Black Caucus and Mayor Lightfoot. One of the issues that the Black Caucus had with the lack of pot licenses in the community, this was Alderman Beal.
We have to stop looking out for self-interest and look out for the masses of our community. That's the only time you're going to see our communities turn around. When you see the Black Caucus stick together and put their self-interest to the side and stick together for the cause, you will see mountains moved in this city of Chicago.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll let you know when that's going to happen. Also, the study that visits the idea of giving gay and transgender-owned businesses a leg up on city contracts,
I'm in full support of rights for all people. Let's just say that, but first of all, I want to be clear on that. I just never knew that there was an issue related to gay and transgender LGBT rights as relates to contracting. A lot of the concerns were primarily for gay white males. You know, white males don't need set-asides, straight or gay.
That's Alderman Sawyer. All right. He can tell, you can tell everybody's going to get along. Don't worry. Racial politics, identity politics, they're not alive and well in Chicago. I mean, fine. All right. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one, including a look at the Grammys, tribute to Kobe Bryant, and a it's going to be an emotional one, too. Because I was, like we were talking about before, hard to imagine how emotionally devastating this would have been to people. If 24 hours or 30 hours ago said, you know, like, what do you think about Kobe Bryant? I think a lot of Americans would be like, oh, yeah, okay, he was a basketball player and he retired. But then when he died tragically, it changed, it impacted so many people in such a real way. So we'll be exploring that as well, what the reasons are for that. Here is Lauren Lapka, in the meantime, telling us about the traffic and the weather. It's the Rokan Show, 720 WGN, the top 5-5, continuing right here. Thank you. Now, when I say we're locked, I mean locked emotionally, too. All right, here we go. Top 5-5 continues. We worked our way up to
number three.
Backstage at the 2020 Grammys Staples Center, Sheila E. spoke to the media following a star-studded tribute to Prince. Usher took Prince's place on vocals in a performance that also featured Sheila E. on percussion and FKA Twigs.
If you will, picture you and I engaged in a kiss.
Okay, I'm hesitant to criticize this, but I must. I cannot stop myself. I'm watching this. By and large, the Grammys has become the best of all of the major award shows. It's the most entertaining of most of the award shows because it's musical performances. Back in the day, they used to have all of the people get up for every category. There's 80-some categories in the Grammys. And they would put 40 of them on television. 40 of them. It would go on for 4 hours. And it would be things you'd never heard of and people making speeches you'd never heard of. Best Tejano Polka record. And then they would do Best Tejano Polka song. And there would be people up there wearing cowboy hats and clog shoes. And you're like, who are they? They finally figured it out. It's now all about actual real entertainers getting up and entertaining. It's a gigantic just musical concert. And that's the way it should be. And every once in a while, they give an award. So the tribute to Prince was something a lot of people were looking forward to. But it was originally supposed to be like a whole like group of people. And then it didn't work out that way. And Usher, who's, I'm not going to take anything away from Usher. He's an amazingly talented guy. He's the triple threat, right? He's an actor. He's a singer. And he was on key. We could say that. The problem was, it was like a Las Vegas review. It was like he was up there. It was like I was watching Wayne Newton doing Prince. We didn't need that. Did not need that last night. I'd have much preferred her to be doing it. I don't know if anybody watched the Grammys. She is amazing. She's one of those ascendant artists that is so special. Who knows where to find her on the radio? That's the issue. She's one of those people that's kind of cross genre, and you're not sure what to do with her. But again, Usher, I'm sorry. Sorry, gotta say it.
Two thumbs up for Alicia Keys. Thought she was outstanding.
She should always be.
She should just be the permanent host.
Yes. And she just make her the host. That's it. Then we don't have to worry about hosts. And finally, and it also shows you how important it is to have a host. And she got kind of political last night.
For a minute, but not overly.
Yeah, but there was...
And she navigated the drama of losing Kobe Bryant, where the way she started the whole show.
Yes. Exactly.
So, I don't know if Ricky Gervais is handling that as well as Alicia Keys.
Right. He's actually the reason there shouldn't be hosts, is Ricky Gervais.
The complete opposite.
Right. She's the reason there should be hosts. Maybe she could do the Oscars now.
That's what I was thinking. Every major award show, Alicia Keys.
She's so talented, though. But you know what? But she's got that kind of hippie vibe going, too.
A little bit.
I don't really understand what that is. I want to have, like, positive vibrations for everybody. And I'm like, okay.
Barefoot while she plays the piano.
Yeah. It was really weird. And then there's... because she always seems stoned. Which is okay.
But I mean, she was relaxing me, too, though. Because the whole day was so...
too bad.
Yeah.
It was very bad. All right. And then, speaking of the Grammys, they get two of them here.
Number two. I'm not bad type. Make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type.
Might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy. Duh. Billie Eilish swept last night in the Grammys. Based on this song, the album that she produced with her brother. It is an incredible, her major debut release, her first major LP release. And now she's playing the United Center, right? She's on a stadium tour. She's 18 years old. She first hit when she was 16 years old. 4 years ago, when she was 14 years old, she was preparing to play for 50 people. Now, who could possibly have imagined that at a moment like this, like a year ago, could anybody imagine that she'd win the four major categories, sweeping them? She won Record of the Year, Album of the Year, Best New Artist, and Song of the Year.
Can I just say that I think Ariana deserves this? Thank You Next got me through some shit, and I think it deserves, like, more than anything in the world. I love you so much. I'm not going to waste your time. I'm really not. I love you. Thank you for this.
You know, we just make music in a bedroom together. We still do that, and they let us do that. And I just this is to all of the kids who are making music in their bedroom today. You're going to get one of these.
Wow. That's her brother, the producer of that. Phineas. Who knew? I learned so much last night. You know, that's the nice thing. You learn things when you watch the Grammys. You know, that's the old white guy. You like, you turn on the Grammys and go, oh, look at that. There's somebody named FKA Twigs. Who is that, honey? I just like imagining my mom. I'd like to actually force my mom to turn off Fox News and watch the Grammys and then have her run out of the house scared.
My dad leaves the room immediately if we ever put on an award show. Look at these damn Hollywood elitists. I'm like, okay. It's just an award show.
Yeah. All right, but then one of the weirder moments of the Grammys last night was the I don't know why they're promoting this so much, but the Osbournes are back now, right? You got Ozzy and Sharon on stage. And they were there to present the trophy for best rap performance, but... but they were completely, like my mother might as well have been doing this, completely unfamiliar with anybody in the category.
The Grammy for Best Rap Song Performance. And the honorees are Hiya, DJ Khalid featuring Nipsey Hussle and John Legend. Drip Too Hard. Lil Baby and Gunna. Panini, Lil Nas X, Ballin', Mustard featuring Roddy Rich, The London, Young Thug featuring J. Cole and Travis Scott.
Who's Aaron? Who won Ballin'? Ballin', I like that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta do what you know. I mean, why don't they, you know? And that was another low moment in the Grammys last night, which is otherwise a really great, really, really great television show. And the other really good television show to watch for award shows is the Tonys, except no one's ever seen any of those plays. But it's very entertaining because, you know, there's a lot of singing and the dancing and stuff. All right. Was that now do you think differently of me because I said that? That's what's happening right now. I can just feel it. All right. And finally...
number one.
Kobe Bryant was one of the greatest NBA players of all times. A superstar who transcended sports. Killed yesterday, as you know, in a helicopter crash in Southern California. 9 people died in that crash, including his daughter, his 13-year-old daughter. A lot of celebrities reeling from the loss. He'll be remembered as one of the greatest players of all times. And his resume speaks for itself. 20 seasons in the NBA, all with the Lakers, fourth leading scorer in NBA history, 33,643 points, five-time NBA champion, twice finals MVP, 18-time All-Star, 20 years in the league, in the All-Star game, 18 times, 11 times NBA first team, all first team, nine NBA all defensive first team, two-time Olympic gold medalist, youngest player in the NBA at the time of his debut in 1996. Kobe was 41.
I, Kobe Bryant, have decided to take my talent. No, I have decided to skip college and take my talent to the NBA.
I grew up a diehard, Laker fan. I mean, I knew everything about every player that's ever played here. So to be drafted and then traded to this organization and to spend 20 years here, I mean, you can't write something better than this. All I can do here is just thank you guys. Thank you guys for all the years of support. Thank you guys for all the motivation. Thank you for all the inspiration. And this has been absolutely beautiful, you guys. I can't believe it's come to an end. You guys will always be in my heart. And I sincerely, sincerely appreciate it. No words can describe how I feel about you guys. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. God, I love you guys. And my family, my wife, Vanessa, our daughters, Natalia and Gianna, you know, thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You know, for all the hours I spent in the gym working and training. And Vanessa, you holding down the family the way that you have. I can't, there's no way that I can thank you enough for that. So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And what can I say? Mamba out.
The top five at five.
Rocon Show, right here on 720 WGN Chicago. John Cass joins us right now. You know him, you love him from the Chicago Tribune. John, you are a member of the Tribune editorial board, or are you just in the meeting today?
I am a member of the board, and yes, I was in the meeting.
Yes, all right. And I want, John, we're gonna treat this.
Did you hear my voice? I sounded like Alistair Cook in Masterpiece Theater.
We are going to do this like a deposition, John. This is how we're going to conduct this interview. All right, now, was it true, John Cass, that the four candidates for Cook County State's Attorney were in this meeting of the Tribune editorial board today?
Yes.
Yes.
The Democratic candidate.
Right, the Democratic candidate. Is there a Republican candidate?
Yes. But we're dealing with the Democrats in the primary.
Okay. Because is there a single Republican, or is that contested?
I think there's
two.
One or two.
There's two. Yeah.
I'll find out.
Yeah, that's right. Don't worry about it. We're just dealing with the Democrats right now. Okay. So now I want to play something for you, Mr. Cass. I want to play a little piece of audio here, and I'd like to get your reaction to this. This is a moment where Ms. Fox, the incumbent state's attorney, was asked why did she proactively go make a call to Jussie Smollett to find out what was going on. Listen to this, please.
And you should have hung up the phone right then and there.
That is not unusual. You want your prosecutor's office to be open and accessible to folks. That is, I think, part of the requirement of being a public official.
Sorry, that's when Jussie Smollett called her, actually. I should clarify that. And that was Robert Fioretti, her opponent, asking her that question.
Yes.
Open and accessible? What is she talking about? Not to the defendant. That's the defendant has their own lawyers. They're the prosecutors. Sorry, John. Your thoughts?
Yes.
I think I broke the phone. I think that's what I just did. I just yelled so loud that I broke the phone. All right. Could you just play that one more time for me? Again, she's getting a call. She is the prosecutor, right? She's actually the Cook County State's Attorney, and she's getting a call from a defendant in a case on her own personal call.
and you should have hung up the phone right then and there.
That is not unusual. You want your prosecutor's office to be open and accessible to folks. That is, I think, part of the requirement of being a public official.
The friendly prosecutor. That's what we want. This is like. John Cass is back with us right now.
Yeah, the call didn't come from the defendant, Justice Smollett. It came from Tina Chen, Michelle Obama's chief of staff at the White House, and a member of the Me Too organizing committee out in California, where Kim had just been with Kamala Harris and others. As Kim thought she was climbing the ladder to become the next senator from Illinois. And at that moment, so she takes the call from Tina Chen, and that's when the wheels come off Kim Fox's butt. Because you know what happened later. She dropped the stage and all that.
John.
Sorry, to throw facts in. What really got me about that whole episode,
yes.
I was thinking, the good thing is that Kim Fox has lost a lot of weight. She looks really good. And I was thinking of her like on The Good Wife. You know, she could be on The Good Wife, or the sequel, Fist Fight, or whatever it is, about the law in Cook County. But that's fiction and fantasy, just like everything she said to me. Because she wouldn't answer any of the questions. Months.
Okay, so we're having a bit of a connection issue here, but so Tina Chen calls. She calls on behalf of Jussie Smollett, essentially, is what she's doing, and she's calling to say, and again, that it is true that Kim Fox had been at a fundraiser in California in the middle of all of this thing that was going on.
Right.
And it was a fundraiser. Kamala Harris was there, as you pointed out. It was a lot of the people from the organized, whatever that was called.
It's the woke left,
The OFA that organizing group out there.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so just take I want to just take the raw politics out of that. I mean, I get it that everybody's coming from some sort of an organization here. What I don't seem to understand is why it is that after everything that had happened, and I guess, and people could stop and go, well, that was a year, by the time we get to the election, that was well over a year ago, and it's a celebrity, and who cares? Really, there's bigger problems, bigger crime problems. And I would say, yes, what I care about is the fact that that makes us all look bad, that A, number one, and he was trying to turn the city's reputation against itself. That would be B, number two. But C, number three is crime in the city, other kinds of crime in the city are going up. Quality of life crimes are going up in this city as a direct and proximate result of her actual philosophy and what she's doing, the actual things, the rules that she's putting in place.
She's part of the decarceration movement that's going on throughout prosecutors' offices across the country in cities like New York. I guess if you rob a bank in New York, they give you gift cards and Mets tickets. And then you have the same kind of stuff going on in Los Angeles. So, or in San Francisco. So, it's part of that whole decarceration thing. She's part of that leftward movement. But that aside, she was asked by my colleagues and me, I asked several times, about the call and all the rest of it. Why did you take the call? Why do you need a private attorney? Why do you need to stick taxpayers with the bill? And her response to all of it was, thank you, that's an interesting question, but, I have to respect the process. Dan Webb is investigating.
I love when people hide behind the investigation. That's my favorite thing. I'm sorry, I'm being audited. I can't answer any of your questions.
Right.
John Cass, Chicago Tribune. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, there he goes. All right, Mike Flannery is going to join us, political editor. We'll talk a little bit about that and some of the other items that are on the table here as Illinois once again takes its place as the most embarrassing political state of all 50. And that includes Arkansas and Mississippi. Right now, Lauren Lapka can tell us what's happening in the roads and the skies. 6 weeks from tomorrow, there is going to be a primary election here in Illinois and in Chicago. And I say that, Mike Flannery, political editor at large, greatest political editor in the history of political editors in this town, especially in the electronic world. There may have been some, you know, in the print world. I don't know. I don't want to compare you
far too kind
to Harry Golden, but you're
Harry
one
Golden
of the best ever.
Harry Golden was my mentor. He was a legend.
You are at Fox 32, in case anybody's wondering. People can see you there. You have your own show, Flannery Fired Up. Still on the air, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, it's on fire. I will ask you this. I cannot be more disappointed. I've covered a lot of stupid crap in this town and in this county and in this state. You know, the governor's going to jail, governor's, you know, trials of all kinds of local and state politicians. I'm more agitated, more animated by what's happening here in the Cook County State's Attorney's race, which is something I never thought about. I mean, we never thought about the Cook County State's Attorney because it was always, you know, designed to be a place where some muckety-mucks kid was going to go get their chops because the office runs itself, right? It was always said the Cook County State's Attorney because there's thousands of people in that office, right? Lawyers and other people, investigators, people who work in that. And it was never, ever the kind of thing that people thought about. But now they got to think about it because we've elected somebody into that job who I think, like a lot of other politicians who had that job, wanted it as a stepping stone, right? Was being told, hey, we're grooming you for something else. Tony, it's always, you know, you get in by a system. Kim Fox came in under the Tony Preckwinkle system.
She was the former chief of staff for Tony Preckwinkle.
Right. So they said, okay, now you're going to be this. She's an attorney. I mean, she seems like she seems like somebody who's going to have a political career. At least she seemed like that.
Well, and the ads are once again playing the life story, which is a hell of a story, you know, coming out of Cabrini Green and getting to law school
No, it's amazing. It's a great Chicago story, but I can tell you that there are hundreds of lawyers in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office have a similar story, right? Grew up in the mean streets of Chicago, ended up because they, you know, through good parenting, happenstance, their own personal drive, whatever it happened to be, were able to rise up and above and transcend all of that. And that's great. But that's not the story here. She became fabulous in the middle of it, right? I mean, and when the Jussie Smollett thing happened, which, you know, again, very minor crime by Chicago standards.
But speaking of transcending, this was a transcendent screw-up.
Yes, because it might have been a very minor crime, but the Chicago Police Department and the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and now the taxpayers thereof, are going to have to pay for all of the overtime the cops put in. And now we got to have a special prosecutor looking into what she did because it's so boneheaded. And her excuse for doing it in the Tribune editorial board today in front of the other candidates who were there, the other three candidates who were running against her, you know, was, well, you know, we should be open. We should be when she got a call from Tina Chen, who was, you know, part of the Michelle Obama's chief of staff,
and
right?
Long before that was an activist in the Democratic Women of Cook County groups.
Right.
Yeah.
So to basically say, hey, you know, what's going on? This, you know, this is our guy, because she's out in L.A. This is our guy. This is Jussie Smollett. Let's, you know, just trying to find out what was going on there. And she took the call. I mean, it's just the whole thing is so stupid and awful and boneheaded and so not to the point that we're trying to make here.
Well, here's, you know, my take on it is it's just outrageous that they didn't make Jussie Smollett. They let him go out. They gave him a deal where he was able to go out and look at the cameras and say, I didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, he never actually had to say any words of contrition.
Right.
And it was so that's what has people agitated.
Right. After it was a national, actually international story.
So I will say at the Trib editorial board where John Cass was one of the questioners, the guy you had on a few minutes ago, you know, it was a pretty good encounter with her three Democratic primary challengers. And, you know, they were focused to the degree that attention was focused on the Smollett case. you know, Bill Conway keeps bringing up the young lady that he represents, who he says didn't get the kind of deal. She's was accused of filing a false police report. She didn't get the kind of deal that Jussie Smollett got. When she wants to leave Cook County, she has to tell the probation officer. Now, Fox, for the first time that I was aware of, was firing back at Conway and saying, well, your client, before you got involved, Mr. Conway, your client did have an opportunity for some kind of diversion here. And she could have avoided the criminal justice system altogether. But that is, she's now being featured in a video that's online that Conway's putting on. I mean, you talk about this thing being 6-7 weeks away, the election. You know, that we're going to see a lot of this over the next 6-7 weeks.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay. Let me ask you this. That's right. 7 weeks, I think, from tomorrow, right?
Yeah. It's March 17th. Which
yes. Which I believe is St. Patrick's Day. Is that correct?
I think it's part of a secret conspiracy to prevent the Irish from voting. I think they, they'll feel...
Always was.
They feel we'll be too inebriated to find our way to the polling place.
Vito Marzullo used to make sure that that would happen. Hey, I want to, I want to ask you this question. What will the Southside Irish Parade be like on the Sunday before? That's going to be amazing. Do you think that Kim Fox is going to march in the Southside Irish Parade up and down Western Avenue?
Well, you know, all the candidates are always welcome.
Yeah.
People on the sidewalk often are not shy about offering their opinions.
Yeah.
Will Eddie Burke appear? Will Mike Madigan, who with his wife Shirley often dines at a restaurant several times a month that's right on the parade route. I sometimes walk up there with my wife and bump into the Speaker of the House and his wife.
All right, let me ask.
Are those guys going to be there, and will the Boo Birds be out if they do show?
Okay, so one other question here that ties into all of this is Mike Flannery from Fox 32, political editor. Is today's now official indictment that has come down?
It was not a grand jury action. Two charges against Marty Sandoval. Bribery related to red light cameras and filing a false income tax return.
Okay. Does that now get us closer to one of the bigger pieces falling here?
I think, well, there's every indication that he's cooperating.
Oh, boy.
And a guy like Sandoval, who, if the General Assembly had a high school yearbook, he would have been the guy voted most likely to be led away by the FBI in handcuffs.
That was mine in high school. Yeah, it was good. All right, go ahead.
He was just so brazen.
Yeah.
And he was just so out there. Always seemed to be working angles, and didn't really hide it. There was something admirable about that. It was almost like a throwback to the 1800s or something with this guy. These two charges were filed today by the feds.
Yeah.
This is the way the feds do it when they have a cooperating defendant. Very few details. There's none of the embarrassing,
don't they also do that though to smoke people?
He could be giving them brand new avenues of inquiry,
but they also issue those kinds of those indictments, the informations as you're calling them, as they call them, when they also don't want the guys that are up the mountain that they're trying to get to know exactly what it is that they've got. So there's a good way to smokescreen that.
If Michael, I'm farther up the mountain, I'm quaking and quailing tonight.
Yes, I think there's a lot of that going on. Michael Flannery, thank you very much. Thank you for just being here and being my counselor during all of this, because this has really been, I'm too emotional, I think. It's happening. Thank you so much. We can see you on Fox 32, and Flannery.
Yeah, heading to Iowa this weekend.
His pants on fire. Oh, yeah.
Going to be out there.
What's happening in Iowa? We got to go.
They start voting on Monday.
It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Are you a box blocker? Are you? Have you blocked a box?
Come again.
I'm going to ask both of you this question. I need an answer from both of you before I move any further.
I'm trying to decide if I should go to HR about this comment right now.
There is a story today, I love this, that one of the biggest problems that we have in Chicago is the blocking of the box.
Is this similar to blocking of another
situation? This is like you walk in, you walk into a bar and you go, "Why were you late? I got box blocked by a box blocker." It's a traffic issue, people. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Well, I'm glad you clarified.
Turns out that Chicago, it leads the nation in rush hour problems because people are blocking the box. And we don't enforce it properly.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what's the box?
The box is in the intersection. When you go into the intersection, like, for example, I'll give you a very practical example that many Chicagoans are familiar with. I would say people in the Chicago area are familiar with. Downtown, let's say you're getting on the Kennedy, mm-hmm. right? Or to the Ryan or whatever, on Ohio Street or on Ontario.
Yeah.
And this always happens by the Rock and Roll McDonald's. The lights are not staged properly, and people just pull up waiting for the lights to turn green and the light ahead or two lights ahead, so they'll make it through the box because they're on a long green light.
Right, like they'll give it a shot and go through the yellow without properly forecasting what's ahead of them, realizing that if they go into the intersection, they're going to be stuck in the intersection.
Yes.
Because the traffic ahead is jammed up. Yeah, seen it 1,000 times.
Mary Wazinski wrote a story about this today for the Chicago Tribune, and Mary joins us right now. We are box blockers, are we not, in Chicago?
We sure are. This is you see this all over downtown at rush hour, and you also see it out like in the neighborhoods and the suburbs around big shopping centers. People
yep.
are out, you know, trying to get out, and they're ruining people's days out there too. And it's really dangerous, especially if you're a pedestrian trying to get across the street, because you know the cars are sitting there in the crosswalk, and so you're having to weave around, and it just causes this cascade effect of gridlock all over the city, because you have people can't get through in one intersection and they can't get through in another intersection, and it just makes it a real mess.
Right. See, exactly the problem. Now, why, I would like to know, this is time for confessions of a box blocker. When you are the box blocker, 312-981-7200, when you're the box blocker, are you ashamed of yourself as a box blocker? Are you, or do you think it's your right to be a box blocker? Because I want to know the answer to this. And then there's always somebody who pulls up and just starts honking. Right? Because then all of a sudden you get the green going the other way, right? You get the green going the let's say it's a east-west box blocker, and then now you got the north-south one going, and the north-south people pull into the intersection, and they're all blocked up right there, and they start honking, and then every once in a while you get somebody who gets like real sheepish, and they just hold on to the steering wheel real tight and look forward and go, they can't be, if they're not honking at me, are they? And then you've got the people who are like, wait, what are you doing? What are you looking at? And they start waving their pistols around. I mean, there's no good answer to this.
Well, people have told me that, well, they move forward because people behind them are honking at them, you know, and so they move forward into the intersection, even though there's nowhere to go. You know, the people behind you are, they're just telling you that they have horns. They're not telling you that they're wise in the way of traffic.
Right. That's not their, so that's not their business. Them. You are responsible right. for your own rocket ship here, people. You must be responsible for your vehicle. If you're in the vehicle and there's somebody behind you, don't worry about it. What are they going to do? Are they going to get out and shoot you? Well, there's a 1 in 10 chance that's going to happen. But there's an equal chance that somebody's going to pull up. The same threat of bad behavior or violence exists by the people who are coming across you laterally as well. So just
right,
look at it
right. So you might as well do the right thing.
Exactly. And the other problem, and this is what you write about, is that the city of Chicago is not particularly good at enforcing this, which I'm surprised right. by, because I do see, cops. Downtown, I've seen cops pull people over for this, but because it's already gridlocked, it's hard to do that because that creates more gridlock.
Right. Well, that's what they've told me when I asked about it, that, they mostly downtown and the near north side, their traffic units mostly handle crashes, and they have to weigh to see if it's worth the enforcement effort, because if they pull someone over, they might cause a bigger backup. But Alderman Riley, who's ward covers the downtown, says he respectfully disagrees. We have laws on the books for a reason, and we have to start enforcing this.
Mary, as you know,
in other cities.
As you know, as a lifer, Mary, and covering this
yes.
town for a long time, you understand this. We have a lot of rules on the books. Most of them we don't pay any attention to. And the ones we do pay attention to are sometimes the wrong ones. So there we go.
Right.
That's how we have it. Mary, thank you so much. It was a great story today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right,
thanks for having me.
We'll take your phone call, 312-981-7200. Are you a box blocker? Why have you blocked the box? What do you do when you block the box? Even if you're a little, even if, you know, you're just, you know, like just the tip of your car box blocking, you know, just the tip, and you like, you just go over into the crosswalk. Not, you're not all the way getting in the way of the car. And then people have to walk around you, right? But then they have to walk into the traffic to walk around you. It's just as bad. It's just as bad. To your phone calls, we return. 312-981-7200. But first, here she is to tell us about box blockers and whatever else is going on the roads and the skies. Lauren Lapka.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Biggest crisis in Chicago right now? Box blocking. People whose box have been blocked by other irresponsible people. This is a driving issue. Get your minds out of the gutter. I cannot believe the reaction that these two had when I brought it up. But there's a story in the Tribune today, Mary Wisniewski, you just heard from her, that people in Chicago, a traffic study just shows that one of the biggest problems with gridlock, rush hour gridlock, is people that drive into on a yellow light or even a stale green light. They drive into the intersection hoping that the traffic ahead of them will move, and it doesn't. And then they're stuck. In the middle of the intersection, cars can't come across, pedestrians can't come across, and everybody gets mad.
I'm like an ashamed dog after doing something bad, but I don't want to make eye contact with my owner, so I'm the one who just, when I'm box blocking, I'm just holding onto my steering wheel, looking forward, because I know everybody from all four directions is staring at you like, what an idiot. It's like, I'm sorry, turn green, please.
This should be the biggest shaming thing that happens in America right now. Sherry, you've called 312-981-7200. Go ahead.
Hi, Ro. Thank you for taking my call. So I was calling to admit that I have been a box blocker, and I do feel badly when I do it because I've actually been on the receiving end of being blocked, especially when I'm either running or riding my bike. It's annoying. So when I do it, I feel horrible about it, and I don't like to look at the people as well because I'm embarrassed by it.
Now, are you more, Sherry, of the intimidated type that you got intimidated into box blocking, or was it that you're impatient? What is it more with you? Now, be honest, because the first way to get over this, the first way, you must admit to being a box blocker. You must stop and go, my name is Sherry, and I'm a box blocker. That's how I want this. This is a therapy session. This is how I want it to go.
Okay. Do I have to pay for this therapy session now?
No. Okay. We're going to get the Cook County to pay for it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I live in Kane County, so I live in the suburbs. But I have experienced it, again, near my home and, again, where I work. And it's not necessarily intimidation. I would say it's impatience. I'll admit it, I can be an impatient driver, so, you know, you think you can make it through, and you just can't make it through, but I will also have to say another thing that I find annoying, too, is when there's the car right there in front of you, and they could have made it through the light, so then you wouldn't become that box blocker, that's also an issue as well.
Now, you see, that's, what do we do? See, you can't win for losing there, right?
Because, I totally agree.
Yep, because you're getting honked at, right?
Right.
If, like to get through, you figure that that's a complete jag in back of you because they know they're going to make you the box blocker. They're not going to be the box blocker. They're not going to put their tip in and just be in the middle of the way for the intersection for the pedestrians can't get by. They're going to stay. They're going to stop. They're going to be right there on the big white line, right? Like they're supposed to be. And you're going to be the jerk. You're going to be the scofflaw. You're going to be the felon who has gone into the intersection.
I'm going to be the person who needs therapy.
Right. All right, Sherry. We absolve you here. This is like confession. Tom, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Tom.
At 95th and Ashland, I was box blocked. It finally cleared up a minute ago while I was waiting, but I get box blocked there nearly every night on my way home. There's a Metro tracks west of Ashland.
All right, now let me... Okay. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about right there, because you got that... Yeah, the Metro goes right through there. Okay, now here's the deal. See, now when you have that... You brought up a really complicated situation. See, the box blocking, if you get box blocked onto railroad tracks, because you see that happen, right? I mean, people do get caught in things like that, especially in rush hour. They're trying to get across, and you're just figuring that if it's like the BNSF or some other, like, you know, one of the big, you know, freight car lines that you're aware of, you're like, okay, I'm going to get caught on this. I will die if a train comes on because I can't stop. None of these can, actually. But there would be more rare than the Metro ones because you want to be careful not to cross on the Metro one. But at the same time, you got people honking at you to go across, and then you get caught in the middle, and then you're gonna, and you see this, you know, at least twice a year this happens in Chicago, where a car, where somebody's already run out of the car because they were box blocking at a rail crossing, had to get literally run out of their car to get out of the way of the train that demolishes it.
But this is where the box gets blocked 2.5 blocks east
back.
The tracks.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't have the patience to just let the intersection clear, let the traffic ahead of them clear so everybody can proceed. So they block the intersection.
Right. And then all of the north-south is getting blocked as well.
Correct.
Right, because the east-west is getting, they're trying to avoid the train situation. And again, now that's the other thing. You know, this may not be our fault. We may not have been born box blockers. You know whose fault this could be? This could be the people who timed the lights, right? Our parents. I want to blame our parents for our box blocking behavior, because the people who timed the lights, the people who've trained us to go forward and backward and look at the green and look at the red and watch, you know, the don't walk sign. And I do like it when you get the numbers. Now, you don't get them everywhere though, and I don't understand why we don't get the numbers on the crosswalk everywhere, but we should.
Right. Now, there are intersections that have trains crossing, and the light will not allow you to proceed. The light will remain red until the train clears.
Yeah.
So you can't pull up and block the box.
I know, but people, they're like, okay, I'm going to make it through this. You know, and in desperate times call for desperate measures, especially in rush hour. And people do stupid things. I mean, it's like, it is just amazing. Now, I will ask you this, as I, you know, I had to ask Sherry this as well, Tom. Now, when you've been caught box blocking, how do you behave? Do you hold on to the steering wheel real tight and stare ahead? Do you maybe give a hand
absolutely.
Wave over, like, I'm sorry? Like, I'm not, you
no
know, is
eye
that...
contact. Absolutely no eye contact.
Right. So, like, I like to, sometimes I like to, like, go, I like to look to, not that I've ever done this, but I like to look over to the right, you know, because, or left, wherever the traffic would be coming from, mostly the right. And I give them the wave, like I'm thanking them for letting me in. But then I do the thing where I point backwards. Like, it's their fault. That guy.
Yeah. And you want to pull up as close as you can to the vehicle ahead of
right.
you, as if you're going to be able
right.
to make things better.
Yes, and that does. I mean, that's not doing it. I'm doing it at all. All right, Tom. I absolve you too. Thank you.
Well, you know who else is a huge villain in these situations? If you are purposely staying back so the intersection is clear, the person who is in the lane next to you that decides to pull up and go in front of you.
Oh,
they are the worst.
Okay. See, now that should be a felony. And Kim Fox should be taking those people in and then letting them go an hour later, like she is the murderers. Same deal. It's like that is an evil thing to do.
Because then they're promoting the behavior for the car now to pull up. It's like, oh, okay, well, if you're going to jump in front of me, why would I keep the intersection clear? So then they go up and then they do box block.
And also, there's also that lane that nobody goes in, because it's very clear that once you get through the box, it's all lined with parked cars. There's clearly parking through the box on that side of the street.
Yeah.
But there's always the guy that uses that one lane that nobody's using because everyone's like, well, I'm not turning right. And then that person guns it and cuts everybody
right.
off through,
yes.
through the box.
That's true.
I'm not guilty of doing that.
I'm not totally guilty of doing that either. Dropping my car into low and just going as fast as I possibly can. Okay. Dan, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Dan?
Yeah, hey, Ro, how are you?
Good.
I'm an Uber driver, and I see it all the time, but if you cannot make it through the intersection, then you should just stay at the crosswalk or have an out. If you are going to be blocking, have an out where you know you're not going to be in the intersection. And, like, there'll be a space, like, right past the crosswalk that you're going to that you might be able to pull into,
so you're not going to block traffic.
That's like, you know what you sound like? You sound like the driving test when you go to the Secretary of State's office and ask you, when you pull up to an intersection and the light is yellow, should you proceed if you have no place to go? And the thing is, the practical answer to that is, of course, right? Because the guy in the truck in back of me is honking and I got to go. But that's...
Yeah, I feel like you just can't be intimidated by that guy in the back, because it's happened to me, you know, sometimes I try to not make it happen, but sometimes traffic's moving and then it suddenly comes to a stop and you're stuck in the intersection. But I just think, don't proceed if you cannot make it all the way through the intersection.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I cannot believe I'm getting driving advice from an Uber driver. Chris, you're on WGN.
Yeah, hey, Ro. Not only am I one to park in the box, sometimes if I see the opportunity and I think I can back up, I like to go right over that manhole cover.
Okay, I don't know. That sounds like, that almost sounds like a violent threat.
I think he's just sure making a dirty point,
yes,
there.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yes. Bill, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Bill.
All right. So I hear people complain about everything that's wrong with intersections. The one thing nobody brings up is why in the world the crosswalks and that big white line that they paint that you're supposed to stop before, why did they use paint that is slippery when it's wet?
Excellent question.
I think we need to open an investigation, start it here on the Rokan show. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're painting those lines and they're just laughing and saying, nobody will notice. But they
are you suggesting
a four-wheel drive car and you stop on that solid yellow line, which you're not supposed to, but I do.
Are you
and then the light turns green, yeah, and you hit your dash, your tires spin.
Yeah, it's true. You're suggesting that we should go more with the turf than the hardwood there. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying that an intersection's the last place you want to contribute to a slippery surface, I would think.
Yes, I would.
Common sense.
Yeah, that would be common sense. That's true. I don't know. Do they make paint that grabs? I don't know. Do they have, what do they
you
have?
Throw it? Yes, they do. They do it on ramps and other places. You throw a little sand in the paint when you put it in there, and it'll give it traction.
Yeah, it gives a little grit to it. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Bill, I think you've solved a lot
of
problems. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. See how helpful everybody has been?
The short yellow light downtown doesn't help either. Chicago's got one of the shorter yellow lights out there. That
right.
also adds to
right. That
some problems.
Doesn't help, right. Exactly. Because you have a
classic red light scam.
Yeah, you got a little time, right, to get through. And we did realize, we learned that because of the red light cameras, they changed the timing of the yellow lights downtown.
Right.
So to try to catch us in our own bad behavior, and that's the thing. And then when you're caught in your box blocking. And you see that camera keep going off, you keep thinking you're going to get extra tickets every time. But that's just actually taking pictures of people who've also gotten into the intersection, I think. All I know is I think that we have, I hope that now there's an understanding that box blocking is just not cool, man. Not cool at all. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News right now. Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. Let's check in with Alex Stone from ABC News, the Stone Pony as he's known. NTSB just had a press conference in California, where you are based at the Los Angeles Bureau of ABC News. In terms of this crash investigation, where are they? What do they know? Stone Pony. Alex Stone. Uh-oh. What happened to Alex Stone? We're having
I'm back with you, Ro.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Alex. All right. So back to the question. NTSB just had a press conference about the Kobe Bryant helicopter crash. What do we know?
Well, a couple of new tidbits there that we learned, and this was the first time that we've heard from the NTSB since they have been here on scene. They got here last night. They've been on scene all day today. They've been going through and just beginning to document the pieces of the helicopter, to map out where those pieces are. They say that they have found what they call the four corners of the chopper. That means that they found the front, the back, the sides of it, that they've been able to locate all of those. They now know there was no black box on board. There had been a question of, was there one? There was not one required. There was not one there. But there was some hope that there might have been one, because that would really help them know what were the engines doing, what was the altitude. some of the early tracking, at least publicly available, shows that they may have had a drop in altitude right before hitting the ground, which some pilots have said that that would indicate some kind of an engine issue or a fire on board, something like that. Others are looking directly at the weather and saying, look, it was, as has been described to us today by witnesses, that it was like milk in the sky, that you couldn't see anything. And the NTSB, they say they're not focused in only on weather, but they're definitely looking at weather, in that they are now asking the public, for anybody who is around here, to email them photos of what the weather was like at that moment. That is one thing that they're definitely looking at, but they say they don't know. It's still too early in this. There's still debris all over the hillside. It'll take a long time to figure out exactly what this was, and they're by no means anywhere close to that yet.
So we are to assume then that this means that there's really not going to be a definitive answer, at least from the technology on board the aircraft, right?
Well, at least for now. And they will come to a determination at some point. And typically the NTSB would say that that would be a year from now. They usually say it takes about a year to get the known cause. So they will likely come to some determination at some point. But, I mean, everything is pretty obliterated on the mountain here, that they will be able to look at markings on the engines and if there are any burn marks and where the rotor came down. But some of that may be very difficult to do, and they will have to determine at some point, was it weather? Was it something else? This was a pilot that I believe they just said about 8,500 hours of flight time, a very experienced pilot, a lot of experience on this aircraft, was a flight instructor, somebody who was teaching other people how to fly this aircraft, knew instrument flight rules, knew visual flight rules, was flying on VFR and visual flight rules yesterday, but this is somebody who knew that aircraft quite well. They'll take all of that into account. They're going to pull his records, look at those records. Nothing on the surface that shows that he had any problems while flying previously, but they'll want to get into all of that.
So one of the things that they would be looking at here is whether or not it was what the control situation was at that moment, which means that was he aware of his situational, where he was in space? There was, obviously, this is California, so there's a lot of mountainous terrain, right? There's hills, specifically at this place. There was a lot of fog at the moment. The other aircraft had been grounded further to the south than where they were. You're talking about with some of the stuff that's publicly available. There is like Flight Radar 24 and other websites and apps where you can look and see what every plane is doing it at any given moment. You can see what it was doing. And apparently, I saw Mary Schiavo, who used to head up the FAA, on TV yesterday talking about this, that they had actually gone down south, down toward central Los Angeles, and then turned back around and came up north and to the west, because Los Angeles, it's sort of on a curve there. That where they crashed is north and west of downtown L.A., and so the question was, were they coming back down were they sightseeing? What were they doing? And they were supposed to go to Thousand Oaks, which was in the other direction. Do we know, have any idea what the original plan was? Has the family been able to give any clue on that?
Well, just to modify the track a little bit. So what we know is that they took off from Orange County. They made a beeline right up to Burbank. And then they did circles for about 12 minutes, the NTSB saying, and then we can see it on the radar as well. They did circles over the Glendale area, right over the L.A. Zoo, for folks who know L.A. And there were questions about why they were doing that. And what that turns out to have been is they were waiting for Burbank, the Burbank airport, to tell them that they could fly over the controlled airspace of Burbank Airport. Then they continued on. So any bit of holding was waiting for air traffic control to give them the okay to go beyond that controlled airspace. Now, the thinking is when they were doing those circles, that if they were having any kind of mechanical problem, the Burbank Airport was right there. They could have landed there. Then Van Nuys is right beyond that. Then they continued on. They did go a little bit north and then kind of make a loop back around to where they crashed, but nothing, not a major one, not going that far south. And some of that may have been to avoid weather. I talked to one witness today who said that the chopper was right above him, that he wondered what was going on, that he was in a church parking lot. It sounded like it was going to land on him, but he couldn't see it. It was so foggy that he couldn't see it in the fog right above him. and then he heard it hit the mountain. He said you could hear the fuselage crunching, and then it just went silent. He was the first one to call 911. Then he let in the sheriff's department and fire department into where he thought that it had gone down, and then they were able to find it from there. But he says that it didn't sound to him like they were struggling. It looked like that maybe they were lost in that fog. He said it was so foggy, and they were in it, and they seemed to be moving slow when mm-hmm. they were going over him, that he thought it sounded like they were almost hovering, that maybe they didn't know where they were. Now, even the best of pilots, maybe he got disoriented, maybe right. he didn't know where he was, and then things went bad from there. We just don't know.
Well, as you know, that's the cause of most civil aviation, which is loss of situational awareness, right? I mean, that's
yeah, I mean, it happens over and over again.
Yeah. And Jessica Simpson says, because this thing crashed not too far from her house in Calabasas, and so she also heard this thing happening and felt it, actually, when it made impact. So interesting thing. Well, it's tragic and so on so many levels, Alex Stone. I know in Los Angeles, that's an entire city, it's an entire region of the country that is, you know, mourning at a different level than the rest of us are, because I think it's hit so many people emotionally. I'm sort of surprised by the reaction that I had, let alone all the other people, you know, around, because it's a tragic loss of a guy who really was an amazing sports figure, but also would become an amazing, you know, role model as a parent and as a business guy and all the rest of it, too. So it's an incredible loss. Stone Pony, Alex Stone, thank you very much. Appreciate it. ABC News in Los Angeles.
You got it. Thanks, bro.
Let's check in now. Here's Lauren Lapko. What's happening in the skies and on the roads? Rokon Show, right here in 720 WGN. Don't forget, this week, we're giving away a Dibs package. Yes, the Dibs winter package, including a two-night stay at the Palmer House Hilton, the Chicago Hilton, or the Drake Hotel, a Hilton hotel. Go to HiltonsOfChicagoDibs.com to book your winter staycation. And coming up this week, your chance to rip us off. I believe it's going to be tomorrow. They just got the thumbs up from the people in the control room. All right, so tomorrow you can stay tuned for that. Okay, we were talking earlier about this. I wanted to play a little bit of the music from last night from the Grammys. I think it's very interesting, the older you get, the more remote the Grammys become. And I started to notice this turn when I was 30, that all of a sudden I'm like, hey, who's that? And I was a DJ. I mean, I played music for a living. And I started to, you know, once you're like 10 years out from it, even 5 years out, it changes. Then, God forbid, when you turn 40, it's like, oh, wait, who did what? And then when you get into your 40s and your kids, let's just say you get into your 40s, and your kids are teenagers. And then you're like, what are you listening to? Who is that? I shall never forget some of the moments, because some of this stuff is like, you know, there's great art. But then there's some stuff that's like, what did that guy just say? And especially when, you know, like, fresh-faced little girl, you know, is like singing along to Shaggy, which happened to me. It wasn't me.
My rememberable moment was being at a bowling alley. I think I was probably 25, listening to little seventh graders sing TikTok by Kesha.
Right. Exactly. That is exactly the point. And all of a sudden, and then the parents all look at each other and go, they don't know what they're saying. But they do love the song.
Nicki Minaj had a hit, too, where if you looked at the lyrics, you'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't think we need to be singing this in public. The good thing for me, like, now we have the Google machine in our hand. Because there are multiple moments I said, I'm like, who is that? Then Google it up and get a whole, do a little research on the person.
So a couple of the performances last night were, I mean, great, beyond great. It was an emotional night anyway, because it hit me so hard when they, because the Grammys move back and forth between New York and Los Angeles. You know, they're spending more time in LA now than they were, but it would from year to year, it would move back and forth. The Staples Center is where it was last night, and then when the point was made that was the house that Kobe built, right? So the way that the United Center is very much the house that Michael Jordan built, same thing. I mean, Kobe, while he was a Laker, they moved to the Staples Center. And it's a, you know, big, beautiful, great facility. And there's like a whole Downtown Live thing in L.A. that's around the community that's built up around it. And it's like a, it was a very, 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 very special thing. So here's Alicia Keys with Boys to Men.
It's so hard to say goodbye to what we had, the good times that made us laugh outweigh the bad.
Huh? And now
what's amazing about that is that obviously was not rehearsed, was not part of the original part of the program, but then they immediately went into it. It was just, that to me was so, there was such great, you know, respect that was being given there, and also just an amazing amount of talent to be able to pull that off in a show that is so choreographed, and there's so much stuff going on. There's literally things on fire in the back, right? Not during that particular song, but there's pyrotechnics inside, which, as you know, Not always the best idea, and they handled that incredibly well. But then there were some people along the way here that that maybe should have rethought what they were doing. For example, Aerosmith, and they want to do the Aerosmith Run DMC thing, right? Walk This Way.
Haven't they done that already like 100
yes.
times?
Like at every Grammys for the last 30 years, they've been doing that.
One for the money, two for the show. Dance, 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 show.
This sounds, you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like when the kids are putting on their fifth grade musical. And nothing makes sense. It's just a bunch of people screaming on stage. But they're 10. I understand that.
Yeah.
These guys are 10 times 7, and they don't understand what they're doing.
It felt like they were all just yelling over each other.
Yeah.
At one point, I thought Lil Jon was there. I was like, wait a second. Because one of the guys was like, what?
So, there were a couple moments. There was the Demi Lovato moment, which was really special. Because, you know, she's just come back. She almost died from a drug overdose. She's had substance abuse issues almost her entire career. And she came out to sort of, light applause. She started to cry before she started to sing. They had to start over again for her, but then she brought it. What's amazing about that? And then, you know, by the end, she gets this gigantic, long-lasting standing ovation after she had gotten through the whole song. But as you're watching this, there's tears streaming down her face. And it's the Grammy Awards, right?
I mean, she nailed it. It was outstanding.
Yeah. That was the moment. And, you know, you have to stop and think about all the things that these young people, and I feel like this about Billie Eilish, these young people who, you know, she's 18, and I think Demi was like 16 or 17. When, you know, she first became incredibly prominent. And I wonder what happens to these young kids, right? It's the age-old story in music and in entertainment. But Billie Eilish is such a unique sound and such a unique artist. And that album is all about depression, and it's all about suicidal thoughts and sort of coping with growing up. And then to get all that adulation, it's very, very Hollywood, get all that adulation, and then they pull it out from, then it gets pulled out from under you just by the gravity of show business. But it is, you just wish the best for all these guys. But an amazing television show. But I got to get out of the way here and play more of this tomorrow. We have our very dear friend, Justin Kaufman, coming your way next on 720 WGN Chicago After News with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine News.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.